Network News, I'm Corey Morris. The cleanup is underway today in parts of the nation's midsection after Sunday's violent tornadoes that claimed nearly 40 lives. Earlier on CBS's early show today, Missouri Governor Bob Holton said this is the most widespread damage he's seen in most of his tenure in Missouri state government.
I was state treasurer during the flood of 93. Keep in mind, we only lost in that entire episode yesterday, 17. So this is a massive destruction, but we'll come back.
Holton has already asked the Bush administration for federal disaster assistance. Thousands of homes and businesses were destroyed or damaged in those storms, and forecasters say Kansas, Oklahoma, Arkansas, and even Missouri again may be hit with new thunderstorms today. President Bush has chosen the nation's capital to make his latest pitch for billions of dollars in tax cuts today, citing, quote, troubling economic news. President Bush is prodding Congress now to approve an economic recovery plan.
Last Friday, we received some troubling economic news. The unemployment rate is now at 6%. The news ought to serve as a clear signal to members of the United States Congress that we need a bold economic recovery plan.
In the president's view, that bold plan spells about $550 billion in additional tax cuts. He calls it a jobs and growth package. Democrats, though, call it a tax gift to the rich. Also, shortly before Mr. Bush addressed that tax cut rally in Washington, the White House announced Budget Director Mitch Daniels will resign in a month. Daniels runs the White House Office of Management and Budget. Some top Republicans have mentioned his name as a possible candidate for governor of this home state of Indiana. One of Saddam Hussein's sons reportedly hauled away about $1 billion in cash from Iraq's central bank only hours before the U.S.-led invasion got underway. The New York Times says three tractor trailers were needed to remove the American dollars and euros. Although Saddam's son, Qusay, reportedly carried out the removal, their move was said to have been ordered by the former Iraqi leader himself.
Your mission, Mother's Day shopping. Your goal, find gifts that make mom happy. Your rendezvous point, Radio Shack. Consider the following. A talking picture frame to hold snapshots and a recording of how much you love her, $9.99. The Honeywell Environizer, an electronic air purifier to help mom breathe easier, $99.99. A Palmzire PDA to keep mom organized and on schedule, $99.99. Should you fail these objectives, Mother's Day could self-destruct. Good luck, shopper. Radio Shack, you've got questions, we've got answers.
Cheapo.
Penny Pincher.
Coupon Charlie.
Sure, they're just names, but they hurt.
Ouch.
And there's a place that understands. A place called Hotwire.com. We won't call you things like...
Belt tightener.
Oh, no. Hotwire will help you embrace your frugal side with the lowest hotel prices guaranteed, or we'll give you double the difference. Does that sound like someone who'd call you a...
tightwad?
Nope. The only thing we'll call you is our kind of customer. Oh, and cheapskate.
Hotwire.com. Fly, sleep, drive. Cheap.
Most of Washington, D.C. area sniper suspect Lee Malvo's alleged confession can be used at his upcoming trial. A Fairfax, Virginia judge made the ruling earlier today. Malvo's defense team had argued the teen suspect did not understand what he was doing when he waived his right to an attorney before he talked with investigators. The Detroit Free Press today says Kmart is scheduled to emerge from bankruptcy today, 15 months only after the Michigan-based retailer filed for Chapter 11 protection. The change means Kmart will no longer be protected by the court system that allowed the company to reorganize and develop plans to pay off creditors.
Right now, during deer season, your John Deere dealer's offering special incentives on all lawn and garden tractors. Not that you need any incentive. After all, you put the mow in motivation, the zing in fertilizing. We simply want to reward that passion with offers that help you buy a tractor with the durability, versatility, and exclusive support someone with your commitment so richly deserves. So head into deer season. There's nothing like it, and nothing runs like a deer.
At participating John Deere dealers through July 7th.
The leaders of both Britain and Ireland are scheduled to meet today to discuss the still-faltering peace process in troubled Northern Ireland. Elections to the province's power-sharing assembly were postponed until the fall last week amid the continuing impasse in those talks. More on the story now from correspondent Suzanne Chislett.
British Prime Minister Tony Blair and his Irish counterpart Bertie Ahern meet in Dublin to discuss finding a way forward in Northern Ireland's political process. The assembly, which governed the province under the five-year-old Good Friday Agreement, was suspended last October, and fresh elections to determine who should sit on the body have now been postponed until later in the year. Mr. Blair was unhappy with the wording in an IRA statement on whether the paramilitary group would cease all violence and work towards peace. Blair and Ahern have drafted a joint declaration on the future of Northern Ireland and are expected to discuss which parts can be implemented to help maintain momentum as they look for permanent solutions to the stalemate. Suzanne Chislett, London.
And I'm Corey Morris, and this is IE America Radio Network News.
Hi, I'm Bobby Likas with today's Car Clinic Minute.
Life in a fishbowl. No, not in an aquarium. The behaviors of these specimens were observed while they were driving their cars. When we come back, I'll tell you what you've been doing on the road.
Rain-X now has a line of car waxes specially designed to protect your car's finish, not just to make it shiny and look good. Any wax can do that. Rain-X car waxes form a protective polymer seal over your car. The same way Rain-X windshield treatment repels water, Rain-X's new line of car waxes repel rain, road grime, UV rays, even tar. For a tough, protective barrier that does more than just keep your car's finish looking great, check out Rain-X's new line of car wax. Rain-X, protection you can see.
Stretch limos with tinted windows aside. What we do while driving is on display for everyone to see. And according to an Exxon poll of 1,000 drivers, our top three favorite activities are 1 in 5 of us flirt with other drivers. Another 40% actually reach out and touch someone with our cell phones. And the number one private activity that 70% of us perform for public view is the ever-popular eating. Now that gives dining and dashing a whole new meaning. I'm Bobby Likas. Likas, you'll love us.
Brought to you by Rain-X Wax, the ultimate shield.
Providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network.
He's the man who uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome to the program. Speaking to you on the IE America Radio Network on terrestrial radio stations from New Mexico to Alabama, broadcasting from the depths of outer space on the Sirius satellite, covering North and Central America from Alaska to the equator, and streaming audio on the Internet with listeners from Europe to Asia. This is the Tom Hartman Radio Program. We're also rebroadcast by RadioPower.org from 5 to 7 p.m. Eastern Time on the Internet and, of course, streamed live at www.ieamericaradio.com. I'm speaking for the radical middle on this program. The words right and left have become so abused. They've just been trashed by the neoconservatives that they really no longer have meaning. But the average American still really knows what they want and what is best for their nation, for our country, for America. I'm calling for a return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy that this country was founded on, where corporations had to answer to we, the people, and couldn't buy off politicians, where fair play wasn't a code phrase for the rich getting more and working and middle management people and entrepreneurs getting squashed, where there was a social contract that people's basic needs would be taken care of, because that's what we do in a community, in a nation that was founded on justice and fairness, not on materialism and greed, where people could work hard to get ahead, and at the same time, we didn't leave people starving in the streets. We have a couple of messages on the message board at tomhartman.com. Mike M. in Kansas City is talking about left and right-wing radio. We had a guest on last week who was a conservative talk show host. And Mike says, fanaticism is a good word, I think. And he goes, it's a rather lengthy comment here, so I'll just pull a little. He says, perhaps the right-wing fanatics are more visible, being backed with vast amounts of corporate cash, while those on the left are pretty marginalized. And he says, I agree, however, that it's good and politically smart to explain that fanaticism as a psychological entity crosses party lines, and thus no fanatic of any political stripe deserves a free ride. Interesting commentary there. I think that we're certainly moving in one direction in this country. In fact, we'll be getting to that in just a second as we continue on with the show. By the way, if you'd like to call the show, we're at 1-800-TALK-YES. That's 1-800-825-5937. Klaus left a message from Eugene, Oregon. He says, don't forget to keep watching what does and doesn't happen in Afghanistan. Never mind the promises made. But then again, where will the investment yield the greatest return, Afghanistan or Iraq? And do we have an insatiable need for enemies to fight? And then Finisher in the Chicago suburbs says that he liked the program on Afghanistan on 60 Minutes. I didn't catch that. I was out of town over this last weekend and just got back about midnight last night. But Klaus responds from Oregon. He says, no, it's just the post-war situation of needing the next distraction of the moment, which right now happens to be the beginnings of election 2004. He says, personally, I'm waiting for the other shoe to get dropped by the neocons, the next war to be focused on. Or perhaps they'll be more sly about it. It's going to be interesting to see how these things play out, isn't it? Our question for this hour is democracy, is American democracy served by a worldwide escalation of the nuclear arms race? And if you have thoughts on that, I'd love to hear from you. We've got a bunch of really useful and interesting information on it. But first, I want to just share a little bit with you about Silvio Berlusconi. But before we get to that, we've got David from San Francisco who wants to talk about money found in Iraq. Welcome to the program, David.
And I had been listening to another show a little while ago, and they were talking about, of course, we've been hearing for a few days about all of this, these huge piles of dollar bills that they've been finding in Iraq. Now,
yeah.
Had you heard anything about it actually being uncirculated money?
I haven't been following that and haven't caught all the details. And Shar, if you can catch that, I'm getting a huge echo back into my headphones here. Yeah, okay, great. But I did notice in today's New York Times there was an article on the front page, as I recall, about how one of Hussein's sons had apparently, at 4 o'clock in the morning the day before the bombing started, withdrew $1 billion from one of the banks in U.S. currency. Maybe that's some of what they're finding. I don't know.
Well, what makes it significant is what they call uncirculated bills. Mm-hmm. In other words, these are bills that came straight from the U.S. Treasury, straight from somewhere in the heart of the United States. These are dollar bills that are impossible to get unless you've got the best security clearance that you can imagine. It's like raiding Fort Knox, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so how is it that there are billions of dollars in uncirculated bills in Iraq? You know,
that's a good question.
This is very profound. And then I guess the next part is, of course, how old are these bills? But, it sounds like, if we pay attention to what's been going on with Dick Cheney, while he was the CEO of Halliburton, he was the biggest contractor involved in oil drilling equipment to Iraq, and possibly he was the biggest, or Halliburton was the biggest contractor, Western contractor in Iraq at that time.
Up until 2000.
Right, yeah. And then in the second part of it is then there were layers of other contracts that were going on. If you remember, even up to the day the bombing started, just a couple of weeks ago, the United States had doubled the purchasing of oil from Iraq.
Mm-hmm.
So we were actually, I think, second to Venezuela. After the activity started going on in Venezuela, we were actually buying more oil in Iraq than because of the drop-off in Venezuela. And so was the Bush administration actually making cash purchases for oil using uncirculated bills? This is really significant because Congress has the ability to authorize payments. And was Congress authorizing these? Who was allowing uncirculated bills to leave the Treasury? And then finally, if all of this cash is being hauled back to the United States, we are then looting that country. Because if there was a purchase made, if there was a contract made, whether it was by Clinton or by Bush, that contract should be honored and that money go into circulation in our new colony, Iraq. Mm-hmm. And if we want them to start using U.S. dollars, we better let those bills stay in that country and get spent. And, not be put on a shipload where they can, gosh darn it, they might disappear.
Good points, David. Good points. I think you've raised some really good questions, and I really appreciate your calling. Thank you very much for the call. The a couple of things immediately come to mind. One, I noticed a news report a week or two ago about how the Fed was actually exporting cash to Iraq to replace the dinars, that they were trying to put Iraq back onto a dollar economy. And, of course, you know, Iraq had announced just a few weeks ago that they were moving into a euro economy, which was something that really alarmed the U.S. government, that oil might end up being denominated in euros anywhere in the world is something that could be potentially destabilizing for our economy, or let's say helpful for the European economy, more helpful than for us. So that's a possibility. I don't know. It could be that they're not truly uncirculated. I mean, I've gotten dollar bills in foreign countries from vendors that looked like they were brand new. Could just be that they're, you know, their second run around. So I'm not really sure. I don't know. It's an interesting question you raise, and it'll be a good one for hopefully our media to be looking into. And if not, maybe you can come up with something and let us know. In today's New York Times, May 6th, New York Times, the Italian leader, Silvio Berlusconi of Italy. Italian leader, in a first, testifies at his own bribery trial. And in a remarkable scene, Prime Minister Silvio Berlusconi of Italy appeared at his own bribery trial today and said that he had entered into a business deal in question because Benito Craxi, the prime minister at the time, urged him to do so for the good of Italy. Now, this guy is really... Americans don't know about Berlusconi, and they should. It's amazing to me how many Americans don't know the history of this. This guy was a businessman. Some have suggested that he was a businessman who engaged in the kind of behavior that he's being charged in court right now with, perhaps a little less than fully ethical. Others defend him. He was one of the first people, when Italy started privatizing television, to jump in, because they had state television, sort of the equivalent of BBC, you know, there was the Italian broadcasting. But when they began to privatize it, he jumped in and he bought or built one of the very first television networks, and ultimately ended up buying the second network and then the third network. There are three major television networks, like ABC, CBS, and NBC in Italy. And Berlusconi, this businessman, bought all three. In the process, he became the richest man in Italy. Then, once he owned all three television networks and many of the newspapers around Italy, as well as the Milan soccer team, FC Milan, also known as Forza Italia, which is also the name of his political party, he decided to run for prime minister. He decided to run for head of government. And surprise, surprise, he won! We need to be thinking about this as the FCC moves closer and closer to its June 2nd date that they've announced that they're going to further loosen rules on how many radio and television stations, newspapers, other media outlets, cable stations, cable systems, and whatnot can be owned by one individual or one corporation or an individual through a corporation, as in the case of, for example, Rupert Murdoch, who is not an American. He is an Australian who has become a citizen of Great Britain, and yet he owns Fox Network. How much influence do we want this guy having in our country? The story, you know, and again, Italy is a cautionary tale, I think. The story from the New York Times today, an Italian prime minister could be found... It presaged another possible first, that an Italian prime minister could be found guilty of a major crime while in office. Now, here's the amazing thing. Even if he was found guilty of this crime, the New York Times said, a conviction could do Mr. Berlusconi significant, although not necessarily crippling, political damage. He can spin, I mean, he owns all three television networks. He can totally spin it. They go on to say, Mr. Berlusconi, Italy's richest man, is accused of bribing judges in the mid-1980s to try to influence the sale of a state-controlled food company to him and not to competitors. And then they, little farther in the story, they say, just last week, Cesare Previti, a co-defendant in the prime minister's bribery trial, was convicted of corruption in a separate case and sentenced to 11 years in prison. Other Berlusconi aides are now trying to push through Parliament a law that would give the highest-ranking leaders of the Italian government, e.g. Berlusconi, immunity from criminal prosecution while they're in office. And, of course, they're using the three television networks to promote this law. They end the story by saying voters elected him after the bribery charges had already been filed, and despite a long history of criminal proceedings against him, they elected this guy prime minister of their country. Why? I would say because he owned all three of the television networks. Question we're going to get into right after this break is American democracy served by a worldwide escalation of the nuclear arms race and the discussion about it in America? This is the Tom Hartman radio program on the IE America radio network, where the talking points don't come from right-wing think tanks. We'll be back.
Whether it's fair or not, people judge you by the words you use. In business and socially, your vocabulary and language skills tell everyone about your background, education, even your intelligence. That's why you need Verbal Advantage. While you listen, Verbal Advantage will give you the confidence that comes with a strong command of the English language. No more fumbling for the right word. No more embarrassment at how to express yourself. No more fear of using the wrong word. And it's so easy. To learn, you simply listen. When you want, where you want. See why over 100,000 people have already gotten the verbal advantage they need for success.
To learn more about verbal advantage, call now. 1-800-444-1984. That's 444-1984. 1-800-444-1984.
Are you wondering how to prosper in our so-called muddle-through economy? Experts say that gold is now the buy of a generation. Hi, I'm Christopher Kent, host of Antique Talk, and I'd like to introduce you to Swiss America, the company that's helping America to rediscover gold. Now, I'm no expert on the economy or on gold, but I am an expert on antiques and collectibles. And Swiss America is the leader in the United States collectible coin market, which has a very impressive track record over the past 30 years. But before you launch out into rare coins, the first step is to get educated. So please, write this number down, 1-800-289-2646, which spells 1-800-BUY-COIN. That's BUYCOIN. Ask for a free copy of The New Gold Rush. It'll help you understand this emerging gold rush so you can stake your claim and tell them Christopher Kent told you to call.
If you're looking for the latest in cutting-edge technology and the products that everyone is talking about, tune into tomorrow right here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Pacific. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the highly interactive radio program with experts featuring the latest in consumer electronics, technology, computers, and the Internet. We cover all things cool, like digital photography and video, home theater and audio, home automation, gadgets and gizmos, the technology of making music, computer peripherals, HDTV, DVD, MP3s, car audio, navigation and security, and lots more. If it draws current, we talk about it. Let us bring you into tomorrow. Check out our website anytime at graveline.com and join us this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific, here on the IE America Radio Network.
You've got your green alligators and long-neck geese, humpty-back camels and some chimpanzees, some cats and rats and elephants, but sure as you're born, don't you forget that unicorn.
Sunday nights, please, please listen to our show, because if you don't, Mark will not stop singing. Animal Talk, Sunday nights, on the IE America Radio Network.
Greetings, everybody. This is Ramsey Pollard, Jr., the host of IE America's Sunday afternoon travel show, Ramblin' with Ramsey, on air 5 to 7 p.m. Eastern Time. Almost every Sunday, I travel to some location to offer you the opportunity of not only receiving wonderful printed material about the location, but to win a prize, maybe a couple of nights in a hotel or a resort or T-shirts or fudge. Oh, yes, there's always a lot of fudge. Come on, tune us in on your radio or go to IEAmericaRadio.com. I'll be there.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
Welcome back. It's about 25 minutes after the hour. This is the Tom Hartman radio program on the IE America Radio Network and Sirius Left Channel 145 and on radio stations across the country. Today our quote comes from the Great Law, or also known as the Constitution, of the Iroquois Confederation. The Iroquois Confederation was a banding together of five, ultimately it became six, nations of Native Americans in the Northeast. Ben Franklin and Thomas Jefferson invited, and James Madison invited 34 representatives of the Iroquois Confederacy to come in and speak to the assembled delegates when they called the Constitutional Convention in the early 1780s to write the Constitution for the United States. And in the opening day of the Constitutional Convention, Franklin got up to introduce these 34 people from the Iroquois Confederacy who slept upstairs in Liberty Hall throughout the most of the year that they were doing this writing of the Constitution. And Franklin said, and of course this reveals the kind of racist, slanted mindset of the day, but I don't think he meant it viciously. It's just simply that, you know, it's the unfortunate reality of how people thought back then. But anyway, he said, if five nations of ignorant savages have been able to forge a band, have been able to forge a union that has survived 1,000 years in peace, then certainly 13 colonies of educated Englishmen can do the same. So Franklin said that. So here's a quote from the, and in fact, our Constitution is based in large part on the Constitution of the Iroquois. We borrowed also pieces from Greek democracy, but in Greek democracy, they didn't vote. It was a lottery system. Much of what we have that we call our Constitution came from the Iroquois. And so here's a quote. Our quote for the day is from the Great Law or Constitution of the Iroquois Confederacy. They say, in every deliberation, we must consider the impact of our decisions on the next seven generations. Imagine how differently our corporations would be run if every decision had to be made in the context of its impact on the next seven generations. Imagine how differently our government would function if every decision had to be made in the context of its impact on the next seven generations. And imagine how we might consider the nuclear arms race if we had to frame it in the context of its impact on the next seven generations. Greenpeace just issued a deck of cards, just like the ones that they're passing out in Iraq. The Ace of Spades notes that George Bush has 10,600 nuclear weapons. Vladimir Putin is the Ace of Hearts. He has 18,000 nuclear weapons. He's got numerically more, but they're qualitatively less powerful. Number three is President France Jacques Chirac. He has the Ace of Clubs. And it doesn't note how many nuclear weapons he has, but he has a pile of them. So let's look at the history of this and how we got here into this whole issue of whether we should have nuclear weapons, how many we should have. It really goes back in some ways to the Monroe Doctrine. After the Napoleonic Wars ended in 1815, as the Spanish Empire started disintegrating and Europe was going through an incredible time of change, and between 1815 and 1822, José de San Martín led Argentina into independence, Bernardo O'Higgins in Chile, Simón Bolívar in Venezuela. All of these new republics were emerging, and they all wanted to be recognized by the United States government. And at that time, the government was a little wary of doing that. But John Quincy Adams, who was the Secretary of State for President James Monroe, pushed very hard for a doctrine that would say the Americas, North America, South America, Central America, that this hemisphere was interrelated with us, that the quality of life of people who are our neighbors would affect our quality of life. And that was the beginning of an internationalist thinking or a multinationalist thinking that came out in 1823 with the Monroe Doctrine, that we live in a world where we're interdependent with others, and we have to pay attention to them. We'll continue with this right after this break. This is the Tom Hartman program on the IE America Radio Network.
Yo, this is Ed Lover.
This is Dr. Dre.
That's right, we in the mix for Twix, baby. Here's the mix.
Ed, I'm gonna tell you right now, all from state to state, it's all about the mix.
You understand? That's how it's going down. Ed Love and Dr. Drake style. Through the streets, just doing my thing. I need the Twix to keep me in the mix and the swing. When I wanna stay real good in the mix,
come on, y'all. Brothers, do a Twix.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
For the IE America Radio Network, this is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm John Hamilton.
The headquarters of the United Nations looked a lot like Baghdad on Friday as food service workers went on a wildcat strike and UN diplomats and staff literally looted the headquarters' cafeterias and lounges. The workers found out Friday that a new company was coming in to manage UN food services and they would not be paid some back wages owed. So the workers walked off the job around lunch hour, and as word spread around the headquarters, thousands of diplomats and staff headed to the cafeterias and literally stripped them clean, making off with everything from souffles to bottles of liquor and even the silverware. The workers are now back on the job this week, but the company running food services estimates as much as $9,000 worth of food, drink, and supplies were plundered.
No signs that Yale University's long-running labor strife is about to end. The union representing 2,800 of Yale's secretaries and technical workers shot down a proposed 10-year contract by an 8-to-1 margin last week. Local 34 of the Hotel and Restaurant Employees Union has gone without a contract since January of 2002 and says Yale's latest proposal falls far short on pension and wage increases. Meanwhile, a non-binding referendum on graduate student unionization ended in defeat for graduate teaching assistants. A slim majority voted against unionization, and while the Graduate Employees Student Organization is contesting the result, the outcome is unlikely to sway an administration that has fought TA unionizing efforts tooth and nail.
More than a million Austrians are on strike today, the largest labor action that country's seen in at least 50 years. The strikers are actually on the job, but they're spending the day talking with co-workers about government plans to slash the national pension and raise the retirement age to 65. Currently in Austria, men retire on average around the age of 59 and women at 57.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
She is. Thank you in Mandarin Chinese.
Is it really? Mm-hmm.
Bantila is right, like cool.
Chinese lesson now.
Wow, Nancy, you're so smart.
Bantila.
You know everything. I should have watched MSNBC yesterday.
I want to be just like you. I figure all I need is a lobotomy and some tights.
On the IE America Radio Network.
Tired of talk radio sounding like a propaganda arm of the Republican Party? Well, so am I. This is Peter Werbe, and I've moved my program to 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time weekdays. Join me as I expose the Grand Oil Party's plans to pay off their corporate paymasters by making this country a permanent warfare state while destroying the environment and attacking the rights of women and working people in the process. So tune by the show, 2 to 5 p.m.
The best of the rest of the news. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program, where democracy is still alive and well. Our question today is, American democracy served by a worldwide escalation of the nuclear arms race? And we are informed in our discussion by the great law of the Iroquois Confederacy, in every deliberation, we must consider the impact of our decisions on the next seven generations. Something to consider. Peter Fehrenbach is the executive director of the Peace Education Fund and a nuclear disarmament expert. Peter, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program.
Well, good morning. Thank you for having me.
Peter, tell me about what's going on with regard to nuclear disarmament here in the United States and around the world. What's the situation that we're facing?
Well, you know, in a nutshell, I guess I would say that the Bush administration's general outlook is that we should abandon the concept of disarmament entirely and, for instance, move from the model of non-proliferation, which has served us over much of the last 50 years, into one of counter-proliferation. And you know, their operating theory is that the greatest security for the United States would be to tell any country that tries to acquire weapons of mass destruction that we have the means and the will to attack them first and destroy any facilities that they're developing, or for that matter, destroy the country itself, and therefore deter any country from going down the road of acquiring weapons of mass destruction.
Claudius school of power.
Excuse me?
The I. Claudius school of power. You know, we are the great power, and you better not mess with it. This kind of comes out of the old guns don't kill people, people kill people theory, doesn't it? And it's nuclear weapons don't kill people, it's bad regimes that do, and as long as we're the good regime and our good friends have nuclear weapons, there's nothing to worry about. But if bad guys come along, we'll squash them like a bug.
Yeah, it comes out of exactly that type of thinking. And, you know, essentially the administration also thinks that they will be able to maintain a situation where the United States and our allies are the only countries that acquire nuclear weapons, or, you know, besides the ones that are presently not our allies that have nuclear weapons, but we'll be able to maintain that type of power, essentially, in perpetuity, which is, you know, with your send-up about the Iroquois law, you know, is obviously not tenable. And in fact, I would suggest that this policy is actually going to increase the pace of nuclear proliferation. For a country like North Korea, you know, what they see in the example of Iraq is that the fastest way to avoid being invaded by the United States is to develop a weapon of mass destruction, and be able, therefore, to deter a U.S. invasion. So we're creating a real incentive for other countries to acquire weapons of mass destruction right now as a way to defend themselves from what they see as a fairly out-of-control United States military.
Peter, we're speaking with Peter Fehrenbach. Is that correct pronunciation? Peter Fehrenbach of the Peace Education Fund. And, Peter, is there a website where people can find information about your work?
Yeah, I should say, actually, I'm the director of the Peace Education Fund, and that's peaceeducationfund.org. But I also serve as the director of California Peace Action, which is the California's largest membership peace organization, and it's the kind of advocacy aspect of things, where the Education Fund is kind of research and media and publications.
Right. Thank you. And Peter Fehrenbach, I'm wondering, I thought we had treaties in place that explicitly said that the goal of these treaties was ultimately to reduce or eliminate nuclear weapons. In fact, somewhere around here I've got the language from the Nuclear Nonproliferation Treaty signed in 1968 and extended indefinitely in 1995. Here it is. It says, calls for the, quote, total elimination of nuclear weapons is the only absolute guarantee against their use, end quote. It's in Article 6 of the the Nonproliferation Treaty. And the United States and four of the nuclear powers accepted this position and in May 2000 reaffirmed their, quote, unequivocal undertaking to eliminate their nuclear arsenals. So this has been the thinking of United States administration since Harry Truman. Is that not correct?
Well, that is correct. And, you know, it seems an unusual thing to say in some ways, but the Bush administration, it's a measure of their recklessness that they're undermining the arms control legacy of the Nixon and Reagan administrations. And essentially what they're saying is that actually this administration has no commitment to the Non-Proliferation Treaty. While the comprehensive test ban was never ratified in the Senate, they, you know, there has been a moratorium on nuclear testing in place for about 10 years, and I would anticipate that the administration will do everything in their power to resume nuclear testing and therefore be the first country on the planet to break that moratorium. They're actively working to develop new nuclear weapons, earth-penetrating nuclear weapons, new so-called mini-nukes, and it's kind of a misnomer since they're, you know, enormously powerful nuclear weapons.
Right.
So, you know, they have made a very clear break away from the concept of even pursuing deep reductions in the world's nuclear arsenals.
So this isn't some small change. This is a radical departure from all previous Republican and Democratic administrations and from the clear intent of Congress in participating in these treaties, and certainly the way that nuclear nonproliferation has been viewed by virtually every country in the world, with perhaps the exception of North Korea, and as you say, they're learning from the lesson. I'm wondering, we're speaking here with Peter Fehrenbach of the Peace Education Fund, peaceeducationfund.org, on the Tom Hartman program on IE America Radio, and I'm wondering, Peter, if you see the possibility of some new treaty coming out of this. Is this going to be codified, agreed? Is there going to be some United Nations activity? And also, there was a question that I had earlier, and I just got distracted and it vanished. I just got it back, and that is, in a universe where the operating principle of the administration is, you know, nukes don't kill people, bad people with nukes kill people, and you have these bizarre situations where, for example, right now Pakistan has nukes, and Pakistan is just a hair away from going the way that Iran did when, you know, Iran was being run by the Shah, our good buddy, and boom, all of a sudden, you know, he was out. He was out, you know, overnight, and we had to install Saddam Hussein in Iraq to balance the power vacuum that existed there once the Ayatollahs took over in Iran. Pakistan could go, you know, in a direction that we don't find favorable, but that doesn't mean their nukes are going to go away. So how are they going to promulgate this, or are they simply doing it by fiat, number one? And number two, what do you say in response to their argument that they'll just make sure that it's only good guys who have these weapons? And by the way, Peter, before you get into that, if anybody would like to call in and discuss this with Peter, our number is 1-800-TALK-YES. That's 1-800-825-5937 on the Tom Hartman program. Peter, go ahead.
Well, yeah, several questions. Let me start with the treaty one. You know, central to the philosophy of the people who are articulating the administration's policies on these issues is that, you know, treaties really are virtually worthless, period. They really have no commitment to the whole concept of negotiating international agreements as a means of advancing U.S. security. And their feeling is that the only means to advance U.S. security is, in fact, you know, overwhelming military power, and they are, in fact, committed to kind of systematically dismantling the framework of treaties that has been put in place.
You're talking about the Bush administration here.
Yes.
They are holding to some treaties, for example, the WTO, GATT, NAFTA treaties. They're you know, continuing to say that multinational corporations have the rights of nation states and can sue nation states.
Well, that's true. I'm speaking about any treaties having to do with directly security issues.
Okay.
In terms of promulgating this, in a brief moment of candor last week, an administration official said that invading Iraq, for instance, was really not about weapons of mass destruction. It was about, quote, setting an example. And, you know, from their point of view, one of the key aspects of that invasion was to send a message to really any other country on the planet that, you know, if we determine that you are seeking weapons of mass destruction, we have the means and the will to essentially destroy your country and remove you from power. And so this was basically a warning shot over the bow of much of the rest of the world, is how they viewed it.
Well, Peter, if I can interrupt you there for just a second, There are those who argue, and some very competent historians who argue that the reason Harry Truman dropped the second bomb on Japan, and some would say even the reason he dropped the first bomb, was not so much to stop Japan, but to send a message to the Soviet Union that we had this weapon and we were willing to use it and they better back off. And there are some historians who look back on that and think that that was a right decision, regardless of its morality. Others think it was a terrible decision and an immoral one and led to the death of many people, but that policy-wise, perhaps it was useful. Do you think that there can be, you know, setting aside the morality of the situation, do you think that there can be a policy argument made that supports this position? I mean, these people can't be making decisions that they think are in the worst interest of the United States, can they?
No, actually, I would, in fairness, I would say that the folks who are defining our policies in this area absolutely believe that this is the best path for the country, and they can absolutely make a certainly an articulate argument to that effect. I would suggest it's the exact opposite. Incidentally, I think that, you know, certainly having an impact on the Soviet Union was an aspect of deciding to drop it, at a minimum, the second bomb on Nagasaki. But bringing it back to the present, you know, essentially if you announce, for instance, this kind of theological view that there are countries that are evil, and then shortly thereafter, in our nuclear posture review in March, actually it would be about 2 years ago, March, that we are going to build new nuclear weapons for the express purpose of preemptive first strikes, and you announce that we are targeting more countries, as the administration did for preemptive first strike, at the same time at the nuclear weapons labs around the country, they're developing new capabilities to enable that threat. And then lastly but not leastly, you have this thing with the national security strategy, which essentially says, you know, that the United States is going to do whatever it thinks necessary anywhere to attack perceived opponents. You know, you put all these things together, and essentially you are, as I say, basically having a shot over the bow to the entire rest of the world. The problem with this is that it assumes that there won't be any kind of equal and opposite reaction. It assumes that the countries who we are threatening will not figure ways to, you know, ultimately undercut or respond to that threat. So just to
that everybody will just back down.
Yeah, and which I think is extremely unrealistic, and even more unrealistic if you factored out over, you know, 20, 50, 100 years.
Right, although the experience in Afghanistan and Iraq, you know, this, I think this administration is kind of feeling their oats. Peter, we have Deborah in Santa Fe. She has a question for you. Deborah, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Hello, good morning, Peter. And Tom,
thank you.
So glad to hear this conversation going on. And to understand the policy, how crazy the policy is, I find it helpful to look at it at a human scale. In other words, if this were going on in my neighborhood, would it be tolerated? You know, this kind of preemptive.
That's an excellent one.
Policy, if it were on the schoolyard, would it be tolerated? I don't think so, and I think it's so critical in this election cycle to make that point that you know, that on a human scale, negotiation works, treaties work, promises kept work. It worked for the last 50 years and kept us from World War III during the Cold War. And I just want to say that the person in the public light that I see promoting this the most is Denis Kucinich, and that he's actually willing to go out there and say we are going to, you know, really embrace the nonproliferation treaty. We really are going to use negotiation. We are really going to mend our relations. And so I just wanted to pitch that I think the people in the peace community need to really get behind him, because he's the only one coming out and saying we're really going to do this.
I think Howard Dean has made comments to that effect also, and been recently reamed for them for saying America may not always be the most powerful nation, or what. I forget exactly what he said. I think it was taken out of context. But Deborah in Santa Fe, thank you for your call and for your comments.
You.
Good point, and I appreciate your calling and being here in our radio home. Peter,
you know, picking up actually,
your thoughts
on this. If I can pick up on Deborah's point about
although,
this.
Peter, we've got about a minute and a half here.
Okay. You know, the neighborhood analogy is a good one. And if somebody in your neighborhood said, you know, I'm willing to and committed to kill anybody I perceive as a threat, the likelihood is that the rest of the neighborhood would perceive that person as a threat and figure a way to band together to address that threat.
Or they'd move.
Or they'd move. In this case, with only one planet, that's not really an option. So, you know, I think that Howard Dean's comments are actually fairly wise. You know, the rest of the world is going to react to this kind of behavior. We can't say exactly how they're going to react, but we can certainly draw some pretty firm conclusions or assumptions.
Peter, in Deborah's analogy, you know, she said the neighborhood one, and she also said the schoolyard one, and that caused me to wonder if perhaps the neoconservative response would be, sure, the schoolyard analogy is a good one, and we're playing the role of the teacher and we're going to keep all these unruly kids in line, this kind of paternalistic worldview. Do you think that that's how these folks are thinking? I'm trying to understand their mindset. You know, where are they coming from on this? I think we've got about 40 seconds here left.
Well, they might be thinking that way, but certainly they're not vested with the power of the teacher. And it's an attitude which will only produce resentment around the rest of the world, because it's really so profoundly arrogant to say, you know, we alone have the right to, you know, determine who is good and who is bad and how the world is going to be shaped. This is the function of the United Nations and other institutions.
And in a collaborative effort, and of course this administration has made no bones about its disdain for the United Nations. Peter Fehrenbach is with the Peace Education Fund, peaceeducationfund.org on the internet, nuclear disarmament expert. Peter, thank you very much for being on the program. I appreciate your participating with us here today on the Tom Hartman Radio Program. This is the IE America Radio Network, and we'll be back after this break. Thanks again, Peter.
The GM 24-hour test drive different from the average test drive? It's about, 23 hours and 45 minutes longer. Long enough to take a GM car or truck to work, to keep it overnight. See how it fits in your garage. See how it fits in your life. For more information and to locate a participating dealer, click to gm.com/24-hour. You must be 21 and be an insured licensed driver with approved credit.
I'm asleep on it. I'll give you an answer in the morning.
I am driven to overcome.
I am driven to succeed.
If you're driven, then you need a health insurance company that's driven too and knows how to take care of the self-employed, the backbone of our country. Call 877-740-7797 and have the Mega Life and Health Insurance Company provide you with affordable health insurance.
I am driven to be my own boss, to live my own life.
I am driven to work when I want to, with whom I want to.
I am driven to be the best.
And I expect the companies that support me to be driven too.
For affordable health insurance designed for the self-employed, call right now. 877-740-7797. Toll free, 877-740-7797. Mega. We are driven. Home office, Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Not available in all states. Benefits may vary by state.
What magazine was the late Senator Paul Wellstone talking about when he said, at a time of growing media concentration, this magazine is an invaluable source of news and information that corporate media would too often prefer to ignore? He was talking about In These Times, a bi-weekly magazine of news, politics, and culture. In These Times has won more Project Censored awards than any other magazine. For 27 years, In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of the labor movement, feminism, grassroots politics, and minority communities. If getting a perspective other than what's in the mainstream media is important to you, In These Times is essential reading. In the words of best-selling author Barbara Ehrenreich, to people who say they're sick and tired of the corporate-dominated and celebrity-fixated news media, I say, stop whining and subscribe to In These Times. Do it now and find out what you're missing. Look for In These Times in bookstores near you or visit them on the web at www.inthesetimes.com. That's www.inthesetimes.com.
You hear that? Doug made his confession that he used hair color.
Yeah, expecting to make it the treatise of the last month. Aren't you guys sweet?
I would recommend sticking with one color, however. Each month you'd have
I
want to
see you try the afro stuff.
Yeah, right. I'm going to do that.
I decided that it is not the color of the hair, but the head that it stuck to that's important.
Doug Stephan's Good Day.
On the IE America Radio Network.
Animal Talk, not your father's radio program, take 47.
Tune into Animal Talk this Sunday.
Yeah!
Animal Celebrity Boxing.
We're gonna kick some butt!
Lightweight bout featuring Fearless Felix the Cat.
What a cat!
And that dog on ice, Tonya Harding.
Tonya Harding, she'll fight anyone for a buck.
Animal Talk, Sunday nights on the IE America Radio Network.
Boy, come on!
Yeah.
Peter Werby Show is now airing at a new time. Hi, it's Julene Jordan. The IE America Radio Network has added many exciting new shows to the lineup, and in doing so, the Peter Werby Show has a new time slot. It's weekdays, 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern. Join us as we share with you progressive views about peace and social justice that you won't find in the corporate and conservative media. Join us, 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern, on the IE America Radio Network. For more information, go to www.ieamericaradio.com. From the network that brings you different points of view from the likes of Peter Werby and Mike Malloy, now a different point of view on the news. IE America is proud to present WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. WINS is a unique news service that focuses on issues that affect our daily lives. WINS is not about what big business wants you to hear. WINS is about us. To hear WINS, go to ieamericaradio.com and click on WINS. If you like what you hear, call your local radio station and say you want WINS. It's something different. It's from IE America and WINS.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network, the network where, as far as I can tell from tuning around the dial, we're the only network with a good collection of great talk show hosts who don't get their daily talking points from the Republican National Committee or right-wing corporate-funded think tanks. Our question today in this hour has been, is American democracy served by a worldwide escalation of the nuclear arms race? This comes out of the item number 2 in my Bill of Rights for the 21st Century, which you'll find on our website at tomhartman.com off the radio show page, the suggestion that we own our government and our commons. We are our government, our government is us, and our government should be making decisions that reflect our needs, our human needs and desires, not just those of the corporations who pay for so many of the political campaigns. And so our quote for the hour was, in every deliberation, we must consider the impact of our decisions on the next 7 generations, from the great law or constitution of the Iroquois Confederacy. Talking about nuclear disarmament and how this administration is moving away from it, every other administration since the development of nuclear weapons have embraced it and have successfully diminished the proliferation of nuclear weapons and power around the world. Or nuclear crud around the world, let's say. Nobody is so far suggesting nuclear power is necessarily the same thing, although there is this interesting situation in Iraq where the Defense Department finally got around, after a month, to quote the Washington Post, after a month of official indecision, to survey a major Iraqi radioactive waste depository, and today they found the site heavily looted, and said it is impossible to tell whether nuclear materials are missing. We have a big mess there in Iraq. The war has, to quote the story, the war has dispersed the country's most dangerous technologies beyond anyone's knowledge or control. They looked at 7 different sites and said none of them were found to be intact. And this is the stuff that the terrorists want to make dirty bombs with. So it's a tough situation, a big challenge. A lot to be concerned about. Nuclear disarmament in the 21st century. This is the Tom Hartman Radio Program. We'll be back right after the news to ask, is terrorism a crime or an act of war?
Listening to the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Copyright 2003.
Do the Republicans or the Democrats have a clear vision for America that actually includes democracy, fairness, and justice? Do the Greens or the Progressives? How can we create a shared vision of the kind of future we want for our children? This is Tom Hartman, and for 2 hours every day, I'll be exploring these and many other issues with guests from a wide variety of viewpoints, as well as taking your calls. We'll be talking about the stories behind the stories in the day's news. That's the Tom Hartman Program, right here on the IE America Radio Network.
From the network that brings you different points of view from the likes of Peter Werby and Mike Malloy, now a different point of view on the news. IE America is proud to present WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. WINS is a unique news service that focuses on issues that affect our daily lives. WINS is not about what big business wants you to hear. WINS is about us. To hear WINS, go to IEAmericaRadio.com and click on WINS. If you like what you hear, call your local radio station and say you want WINS. It's something different. It's from IE America and WINS.
This is IE America Radio Network News. I'm Corey Morris. Residents in parts of the Midwest are still trying to recover today from a series of deadly tornadoes Sunday. May not be out of the woods just yet. More severe weather could be heading their way. That story from reporter Mary Perrin.
Cecil Whaley with the Tennessee Emergency Management Agency says nearly 40 counties are reporting high water and potential flooding.
We've seen 3 to 4 inches of water pour in overnight in 30 to 40 counties throughout the state, and we now are faced with major flooding coming on the heels of the windstorms that came through yesterday.
Whaley says rain has washed out many roads. He urges motorists to be extremely careful and not take any unnecessary risks. Rain remains in the forecast through the next several days. Mary Perrin.
Sunday storms stretched through Nebraska, Kansas, Missouri, Kentucky, and Tennessee, killed at least 40 people and left hundreds of thousands without power. Calling last week's latest numbers showing a 6% unemployment rate troubling economic news, President Bush today is again prodding Congress to approve what he sees as a bold economic recovery plan. To the president, that means another $550 billion in tax cuts. He calls it a jobs and growth package that will give small businesses a boost.
Our goal is a vibrant and growing economy. That's our goal, in which the entrepreneur can find new opportunities, and which every person who wants to work can find a job.
The president believes job security and national security are inseparable. During a tax cut rally earlier today in Washington, the president said the U.S. is winning the war against global terrorism and suggested now is a good time to make bold moves to fix the economy. The president claims his proposal will create 1 million new jobs. Democrats, though, call the president's plan just another tax gift for America's wealthy. And U.S. officials are reportedly getting ready to release about a dozen detainees still being held at the military prison at Guantanamo Bay, Cuba. They deny, however, that move was prompted by a letter to the Pentagon from Secretary of State Colin Powell. Powell's asked for quicker action in determining the fate of hundreds of suspects captured in Afghanistan.
It's almost Mother's Day, and you know what that means. It's time to pick up the phone. A new Verizon wireless phone for mom from Radio Shack. Get her the Samsung A310 for just $24.99 after Samsung mail-in rebate. That's a $75 savings. Radio Shack's experts will even help you choose the service plan and accessories mom will love. So pick up the phone and make mom's day at Radio Shack. Offer good through 525 with 2-year activation. $175 early termination fee. Supply phone is $249.99 without activation. See stores for details.
Cheapo.
Penny Pincher.
Coupon Charlie.
Sure, they're just names, but they hurt.
Ouch.
And there's a place that understands. A place called Hotwire.com. We won't call you things like
belt tightener.
Oh, no. Hotwire will help you embrace your frugal side with the lowest hotel prices guaranteed, or we'll give you double the difference. Does that sound like someone who'd call you a
tightwad?
Nope. The only thing we'll call you is our kind of customer. Oh, and cheapskate.
Hotwire.com. Fly, sleep, drive. Cheap.
Most of sniper suspect Lee Malvo's alleged confession in last fall's Washington, D.C. area shootings will be admitted into trial beginning in November. That ruling today from a Fairfax, Virginia judge, despite arguments from the defense, the teen didn't know what he was doing when he waived his right to a lawyer before he spoke with police. Patrols are now on the lookout in Beijing, China, for people who could be infected with SARS. SARS fears have also forced Motorola to close its Chinese headquarters. An employee for the mobile phone maker came down with the virus. Meanwhile, the World Health Organization has declared the outbreak of SARS in Vietnam, at least, over.
I have a question for the men out there. What do you think your odds are of developing prostate problems? 1 in 1,000? 1 in 300? Actually, my doctor told me they're 1 in 3. But you can help beat those odds. with One-A-Day Men's Health Formula. One-A-Day Men's is a complete multivitamin with 21 nutrients plus lycopene, which Harvard studies have linked to prostate health. So now that you know your risk, help beat the odds. Take One-A-Day Men's Health, the multivitamin with more for your health.
Two close allies of the former Yugoslav President Slobodan Milosevic have been indicted now by the United Nations War Crimes Tribunal at The Hague. They're accused of numerous criminal acts, including the March assassination of Serbian Prime Minister Zoran Djindjic. The Foreign Office of Serbia and Montenegro says the suspects could be extradited within weeks. More on the story from correspondent Suzanne Chislett.
The two former Serbian state security chiefs, Jovica Stanisic and Franko Simatovic, are accused of murdering and deporting Croats and Muslims during the 1991-95 Balkan Wars. They're currently in detention in Belgrade in connection with the assassination in March of the Serbian Prime Minister Zoran Djindjic. Since his murder, Serb authorities have said they're determined to arrest war crimes fugitives hiding in the country, including the former Bosnian Serb Chief of Staff, General Ratko Mladic. The two security chiefs have been indicted on 5 counts of crimes against humanity and violations of customs of war. They're expected to be extradited to The Hague in the next few weeks. Suzanne Chislett, London.
And I'm Corey Morris, and this is IE America Radio Network News.
Hi, I'm Bobby Likas with today's Car Clinic Minute. They say history repeats itself. World War I, World War II, Rocky 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5. But when we come back, I'll share with you some automotive history about a certain bug's life. Hi, I'm Bobby Likas. 10 years ago, I discovered the company with the best fuel injector cleaner, BG Products. Now wait, there's more. To do the job right requires cleaning both the fuel and the air induction systems. The process is called BG Complete Induction System Service. If you want your vehicle to run like new, don't settle for anything less. To find a shop near you to perform this service, go to bgfindtheshop.com. That's bgfindtheshop.com. A Bug's Life could be the autobiography of the VW Beetle, which made history twice. It was originally named KDF Wagon, aptly meaning strength through joy. This odd-shaped little car, brainchild of Dr. Ferdinand Porsche, was designed with the backing of Adolf Hitler, who announced its birth at a Berlin exhibition in 1938. Out of production for almost 20 years, the VW was reborn in 1998. Its popularity with baby boomers and Gen Xers ensures life long into the 21st century. I'm Bobby Likas. Likas, you'll love us!
Providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network.
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back to the Tom Hartman Radio Program, speaking to you on the IE America Radio Network, broadcast around the world on the web, on terrestrial radio stations from west to east in the United States, north to south, broadcasting from the depths of outer space on the Sirius satellite covering North and Central America from Alaska to the equator, and streaming across the Internet all around the world, both on IEAmericaRadio.com and PowerRadio.org, rebroadcast from 5 to 7 p.m. Eastern Time. This is Tom Hartman, the Tom Hartman Radio Program. Our question this hour, is terrorism a crime or an act of war? And the link to our Bill of Rights for the 21st century of this question is, America is not a kingdom and we don't elect kings. This is a real important point, I think, and I want to get into some of the questions, the unanswered questions, perhaps, about 9/11. And if you have thoughts or questions or comments that you'd like to make, our number is 1-800-TALK-YES. That's 1-800-825-5937. We have no guests this hour. We'd love to hear from you. During the news, this kind of sent me off on this tangent, during the news I heard this audio clip of George Bush talking about how he wants to make sure that he gets his tax cuts so that those people who received the money back in taxes, or if you want to look at it from the conservative point of view, who didn't have to pay the taxes in the first place, who got to keep more of their own money, would create jobs. And he is suggesting that we, and I would say because we're talking about deficit spending, it's not people keeping their own money. It is the government's money, because we have agreed in this society, in this culture, that the government is us, and we want this. We want our government to be doing certain things, and now we're having to cut back. You know, Portland, Oregon is cutting back on its schools. New York City is cutting back on municipal services. Cities are reducing picking up trash. We've got roads that aren't being paved. We've got police who are not being paid, are actually being laid off. Big cut in veterans benefits that was proposed by this administration during the Gulf War. It was buried, of course, by the fact of the war. And so now we have George suggesting,
with a robust package of at least $550 billion in across-the-board tax relief, we will help create more than 1 million new jobs by the end of 2004.
Do the math on that. 1 million jobs, $550 billion, that is $550,000 per job. If George came to you and said, I'll give you $550,000 to create one job, would you take it? Sounds like a pretty good deal to me.
With a robust package of at least $550 billion in across-the-board tax relief, we will help create more than 1 million new jobs by the end of 2004.
Americans have to start doing their math. It's very straightforward, very simple stuff. This is not about creating jobs. This is about paying back the people who are making the donations that are keeping this fellow in power. So the question for the hour, is terrorism a crime or an act of war? Well, certainly there are times in war when terrorism is part of the act of war. In fact, the British are still complaining about the fact that in 1776 our soldiers didn't march in formation, that they fired from behind trees and things. But more broadly speaking, looking at 9/11, I published a piece in Common Dreams last week. It was published on Wednesday, April 30th. I think it's probably scrolled off the front page. But you can find it if you go to commondreams.org and just click on my name as one of the commentators down there on the right. And it's proliferated across the Internet. It's on a lot of other sites. It's called The Crime of the Century, The Never-Ending War Against Terrorism. And I asked a question in this piece that I would love to hear your thoughts on at 1-800-TALK-YES, 1-800-825-5937. I started out by suggesting that during this lull in the fighting between the 2002 election cycle war, which really began the strong discussions and the peace movement response to it, really began in the summer of 2002, crescendoed during the election, of course, of 2002, and then was followed by the actual war itself. But it effectively kept any discussion of domestic policies, any discussion of the scandals, Dick Cheney being sued and subpoenaed, the questions about George Bush's insider stock deal, all of this stuff just got pushed off the newspaper pages and out of the news by this war talk, this Iraq talk, up until November of 2002. And, of course, there will be something else between September and November of 2004. We'll see what it is. So, anyhow, in this lull between the fighting, I suggested that people might want to look at the genesis of domestic terrorism in the United States. A book called The Turner Diaries that was written by a fellow whose name escapes me at the moment. The name of Donald was his pseudonym. His real name is something other than that. A right-winger in the United States. And The Turner Diaries opens essentially with a stick-up in a convenience store and ends, it's a novel, and ends with Armageddon, with this worldwide wipeout war that pretty much takes out the third world. And it's a replay of Revelation, and which is, you know, really hot stuff now. And, you know, the Left Behind novels are the best-selling novel series in history. They're outselling Harry Potter. There's not so much discussion about them in the mainstream press because they're considered Christian literature, and so it's like there's a small market for them, or not a small market, but they're considered a niche market by the mainstream press, which I think is a mistake. I think the mainstream press should be paying more attention to what's going on in all these various niche markets. But in any case, The Turner Diaries is another one of those. And this was the book that Tim McVeigh used as his Bible. In this book, this guy, this white supremacist, bombs a federal building in Oklahoma City. And the response of the government in the novel The Turner Diaries is to crack down on the rights of American citizens. They take away the right of habeas corpus. They allow arrest without warrants. They allow searching in homes. They allow wiretapping. They start persecuting people. They start taking away people's guns. And that's the thing that pushes everybody over the top in the novel. The right-wingers, they say, no, you know, you're like Charlton Heston, you know, you take it from my cold, dead fingers. And as a result of that, the right-wing white Anglo-Saxon Protestants of America rise up and essentially defeat the American government, defeat the people of the Third World, and anybody who has any kind of ancestry associated with any nation other than basically England, all around the world. And in this Holocaust, it's a bizarre, sick, twisted vision of the future. And Tim McVeigh read that and thought, this is it. He was going to make it happen. And so he bombed the Murrow Building, the federal building, in Oklahoma City, the very building that is bombed in that novel, thinking that this is going to start the revolution. Well, by the luck of the draw, McVeigh picked the wrong administration. Because Bill Clinton realized that there is a difference between a criminal and a nation, a criminal individual and a criminal nation. Bill Clinton said, this is a crime. I mean, even when they were thinking that it had been done, I mean, you'll remember, if you think back to that time, the first few weeks, the first few days anyway, after the crime, there was speculation, oh, this must be Middle Eastern terrorists, because they had, you know, they had already bombed the World Trade Center once. They had bombed our embassies in Lebanon. We lost almost 300 people at the embassy in Lebanon. A bombing by, as I recall, it was by Al Qaeda, and there had been a series of these terrorist attacks around the world. And so everybody was assuming that that was the case. And so Clinton mobilized a worldwide, you know, using Interpol and other police agencies around the world. He said, a crime has been committed. We need to find the criminals and bring them to justice. This is how Italy responded to the Red Brigades when they rose to power, or when they started doing their terrorist thing in Italy back in the 1970s, 1960s. I don't recall exactly when it was. And it's how Greece has responded to the November 17 terrorist group. And there was another one. Oh, the Red Army faction in Germany. Same thing. They're going around bombing buildings, assassinating people, kidnapping people. And what does the government do? It says, these guys are criminals. They've committed a crime. We're going to bring them to justice. And they bring the police agencies, who are good at finding criminals and solving crimes, out to track them down. Now, Bin Laden, on the other hand, had a somewhat different administration in power when he chose to attack the World Trade Center. And Bush immediately said, this is an act of war, not this is a crime. And there are many to this day who would suggest that an act of war is something that's promulgated or perpetrated by another nation. That when Japan attacked us at Pearl Harbor, it was an act of war. That the theoretical attack in the Gulf of Tonkin, that turns out not to have been the case, but it was presented as an act of war because it was a nation against a nation. And there's been this long history of presidents declaring wars on poverty, wars on illiteracy, wars on drugs. Everybody knows these are just rhetorical devices. These are just useful, politically useful hyperbole. But is 9/11 a crime or an act of war? Well, it's interesting, because if it was just a crime, and I don't mean to diminish it by saying just a crime, because there have been some truly horrific crimes in history, and this certainly has to be at the very top of the pile. It was a crime worthy of a swift, sure, and powerful response. It was a crime whose perpetrators need to be brought to justice. And there's substantial evidence that they haven't been, because we haven't done the police work necessary to find out exactly who they are and where they are. It was a crime of extraordinary proportions. But it was a crime perpetrated by essentially a mafia group. Al-Qaeda is not a nation. Al-Qaeda is this mafia, this Middle Eastern mafia, put together by Osama bin Laden with money from Poppy bin Laden, who at the time was business partners with Poppy Bush. It's an unfortunate coincidence, I suppose. And was perpetrated as a crime. And if it was prosecuted as a crime, then certain things wouldn't have happened. And to understand what these things that wouldn't have happened might be, we need to go back to the words of James Madison and listen to what the founders had to say about what's the difference between a crime and what's the difference between an act of war. We'll get to those after this break. I'd like to hear your thoughts on this on the Tom Hartmann Radio Program. 1-800-TALK-YES. That's 1-800-825-5937. Should we continue with an investigation of this as a crime, or shall we simply say it was an act of war and we won the war, that's it? We'll be back.
How is the GM 24-hour test drive different from the average test drive? It's about, 23 hours and 45 minutes longer. Long enough to take a GM car or truck to work, to keep it overnight. See how it fits in your garage. See how it fits in your life. For more information and to locate a participating dealer, click to gm.com/24-hour. You must be 21 and be an insured licensed driver with approved credit.
I'm asleep on it. I'll give you an answer in the morning.
You want your son to be a doctor, so you've got to get him to his SAT course on time. You probably want to whip up something quick for dinner. Think fast. Think eggs. Like a microwave egg casserole with ham and cheese. It's delicious, easy to make, and ready in minutes. So your son makes it to his course, gets into med school, and you get free medical care for the rest of your life. All thanks to the incredible edible egg. Think fast. Think eggs. For other quick dinner ideas, visit AEB.org, the American Egg Board.
What magazine was the late Senator Paul Wellstone talking about when he said, at a time of growing media concentration, this magazine is an invaluable source of news and information that corporate media would too often prefer to ignore? He was talking about In These Times, a bi-weekly magazine of news, politics, and culture. In These Times has won more Project Censored awards than any other magazine. For 27 years, In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of the labor movement, feminism, grassroots politics, and minority communities. If getting a perspective other than what's in the mainstream media is important to you, In These Times is essential reading. In the words of best-selling author Barbara Ehrenreich, to people who say they're sick and tired of the corporate-dominated and celebrity-fixated news media, I say, stop whining and subscribe to In These Times. Do it now and find out what you're missing. Look for In These Times in bookstores near you or visit them on the web at www.inthesetimes.com. That's www.inthesetimes.com.
Whenever you hear that Washington is moving forward with comprehensive legislation to do this or that, it means that some larger theft than usual is underway. Beware, then, of the comprehensive energy bill that the White House is now trying to choo-choo-cha-boogie railroad through the legislative system. This boondoggle even comes wrapped in the flag as the Bushites try to capitalize on their military victory over Saddam by claiming that America's energy independence is dependent on this glob of special interest gimmies. Buried in it are $18.7 billion in tax subsidies for ExxonMobil, BP, Shell, and the other global oil and gas giants, and for the electric utility greedheads that keep raising our rates as they pollute our air. The congressional sponsors use Orwellian terms to make it seem as though they are working in the public interest by taking actions that, quote, streamline, bring balance, provide relief, allow flexibility, and otherwise do good things, when in fact, they're just engaged in the same old special interest gotcha. For example, their bill would allow oil corporations to escape paying taxes they owe to we the people on gas they take out of the Gulf of Mexico. It would allow the federal government to overrule states that dare tell utilities they can't run electric power lines through your land or community. It would make it harder for you local citizens, farmers, environmentalists, and others to stop utilities that want to flood your area with hydroelectric dams. It would cut the royalties that these energy giants pay to us taxpayers to take the oil and gas from our public lands. It would let coal companies escape paying the health benefits of mine workers who've worked hard all their lives and come up with lungs full of killer coal dust. And the bill would open all of America's coastal water to oil and gas drilling. This is Jim Hightower saying, this isn't an energy bill at all. It's highway robbery. To stop it, call Public Citizen, 202-588-1000.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
On the IE America Radio Network, in our every deliberation, we must consider the impact of our decisions on the next seven generations. From the great law or constitution of the Iroquois Confederation, our quote for the day, our question for this hour, is terrorism a crime or an act of war? What do you think? 1-800-TALK-YES, 825-5937 is the phone number. Here's what James Madison had to say. On April 20th, 1795... which was, about 13 years before he became president of the United States, and after he had finished shepherding the Constitution of the United States through the Constitutional Convention. And James Madison, one of America's founders, the father of the Constitution, wrote to a friend of his, he said, quote, "Of all the enemies to public liberty, war is perhaps the most to be dreaded, because it comprises and develops the germ of every other. War is the parent of armies, and from these proceed debts and taxes. And armies and debts and taxes are the known instruments for bringing the many under the domination of the few. In war, too," Madison continued, "the discretionary power of the executive branch of government is extended. The president's influence in dealing out offices, honors, and emoluments is multiplied. And all the means of seducing the minds are added to those of subduing the force of the people. The same malignant aspect in republicanism may be traced to the inequality of fortunes and the opportunities of fraud growing out of a state of war, and in the degeneracy of manners and morals engendered by both. No nation," Madison summarized, "no nation could preserve its freedom in the midst of continual warfare." So when America was attacked by terrorists under the Clinton administration, the response was to say, these guys are criminals, let's get police after them. When we were attacked by terrorists in the Bush administration, the response was, let's declare a war on an abstraction. A war on terror, not a particular country. We could just as easily have gone into Afghanistan in essentially the same way with our military and taken out Al-Qaeda if we had defined Osama bin Laden as a criminal and Al-Qaeda as the mafia that it is. And the United States wouldn't have had to go into a state of war. We wouldn't have had to sacrifice our liberties. We wouldn't have had this perpetual war for perpetual peace that is going on. And America right now may be a very different place. And keep in mind that other administrations in the past have been brought to power by claiming War on Terror. Well, actually, only one other one that I know of in the history of the 20th century, and that was Germany in 1934, after the burning of the Reichstagsgebäude by Marius von der Lubbe. And Hitler said, ah, a war on terror. And later, of course, this led to wars on specific nations. So, is this an act of war? Or was it a crime that should be prosecuted as a crime? If it's a crime, should we perhaps be looking at who done it? And if that's the case, then why is it that the White House has actively blocked an investigation of 9/11, as reported in Newsweek and on MSNBC this week? We'll come back after this break with that issue. Acker Radio Network.
This is Dr. Danny. Paul, you're on the air.
Hey, Dr. Danny.
Hey.
Man, listen, we're having a hard time potty training our son.
Well, that's a common problem. How old is your boy?
He's 26.
Paul, I have some bad news. At this age, potty training will be near impossible.
You're kidding me?
No, but Paul, I do have some good news.
All right, man. What?
I just saved a bunch of money on car insurance by switching to Geico.
See what you could save. Call 1-800-947-AUTO. Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% on car insurance.
Last year and last winter were both warmer than average. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. Last year was the second warmest calendar year on record for the entire globe. Figures for 2002 show that the global temperature was above the long-term average by 1 degree Fahrenheit or 0.56 degrees Celsius. The average temperature for the United States during 2002 was above average as well, as was the average temperature in the U.S. for the winter that's just ended. Those figures were released earlier this year by the National Climatic Data Center in Asheville, North Carolina. Jay Larimore runs the center's climate monitoring branch. He says the single warmest year on record for the world was 1998. He says the near-record readings for last year fit into a pattern of global climate trends.
We have seen a trend toward warming temperatures, and you know, what we saw in 2002 is just part of that, you know, that overall trend.
Larimore says last year also was notable for severe drought in parts of the world. Monsoons in India delivered significantly less rain than usual, and drought in Australia and the western United States led to numerous destructive wildfires. For the United States, winters have been getting warmer, too. In the winter that just ended, the lower 48 states were warmer than the long-term average by 1 degree Fahrenheit. Larimore says that's well within the normal variations from year to year, but he says this past winter follows others that were much warmer than average, and that is consistent with global warming trends.
Four of the previous five winters before this one were much warmer than average. Then we had one of those years that was record warmest, 1999-2000. So many of the last several years have been very, very warm.
Larimore says some western states had record high temperatures this past winter. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
Hi, Truth Seekers. This is Kathy Bay, producer of The Mike Malloy Show on the IE America Radio Network. I invite you to join Mike Malloy every night from 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern Time for 3 hours of passionate, progressive, political talk radio. Stay connected. Join Mike Malloy as he heats up the airwaves on the radio, the Internet, and Sirius Satellite Channel 145. Join the resistance. Listen weeknights at 9 p.m. and give Mike a call. 1-800-TALK-YES.
For the latest in cutting-edge technology, computers, entertainment, and much more, tune into tomorrow here on the IE America Radio Network, 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time every Sunday. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the interactive radio program with experts featuring new technology and the latest consumer electronics. Check out our internet site anytime at graveline.com. And join us this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific, right here on the IE America Radio Network.
The best of the rest of the news. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Boy, get up, stand up, come. Stand up for your rights.
Stand up for your rights. Welcome to the Tom Hartman Program, where democracy is alive and well on the IE America Radio Network. Why, in the months before 9/11, did FBI headquarters consistently obstruct field agent investigations of potential terrorists? Why were many detailed warnings from the intelligence services of Britain, Germany, Egypt, Russia, Italy, and other foreign governments ignored in the months leading up to 9/11 of 2001? Why do eyewitness accounts of the behavior and movements of lead hijacker Mohammed Atta conflict with the findings of a government investigation? Why, in the days immediately before 9/11, were there massive spikes in the number of puts on stocks of airline and insurance companies? Puts are where you're basically betting that a stock is going to crash and you make big money if the stock falls. Why did the head of the Pakistani Intelligence Service approve more than $100,000 in wire transfers to lead hijacker Mohammed Atta and then was meeting with two administration officials at the time of the crash of 9/11? Why did Congress appropriate a paltry $3 million for the inquiry into 9/11 when at least 10 times that was what was required for the comparatively trivial Whitewater investigation? Why did the Bush administration for over a year stonewall victims' family members' demands for a full and independent investigation? Why, in the wake of the most cataclysmic intelligence failure in American history, has not a single intelligence official been held accountable? Why, in the 1 hour and 20 minutes after the onset of a multiple hijacking with the Twin Towers already hit and a third jet hurtling to our nation's capital, did not one single United States Air Force or Air National Guard fighter defend the Pentagon? And why were some prominent travelers, such as John Ashcroft, warned not to fly prior to 9/11 and, in fact, didn't? Our question for the day, is terrorism a crime or an act of war? If it's an act of war, then we go off to war. If it's a crime, then we need to investigate it. Questions to be looked into. Who did this? How did it happen? How can we prevent it from happening in the future? How can we track down the perpetrators and bring them to justice, both domestically and internationally? Somehow, when it gets framed as an act of war, all these questions get lost. I'm curious what your questions are on this, too. 1-800-TALK-YES, 1-800-825-5937. Is the number for the Tom Hartman Program here on IE America. MSNBC, a Newsweek web exclusive, The Secrets of September 11, says, even as White House political aides plot a 2004 campaign designed to capitalize on the emotions and issues raised by the September 11 terror attacks, administration officials are waging a behind-the-scenes battle to restrict public disclosure of key events relating to the attacks. Say what? We have an administration that's going to exploit 9/11 for political gain, something that all the political parties agreed would not happen after 9/11. That it would be an immoral thing to do. It would be the equivalent of political corruption. And at the same time that they're coming right out and saying this is what they're going to do, they're waging a behind-the-scenes battle to restrict information. At the center of the dispute is a more than 800-page secret report prepared by a joint congressional inquiry detailing the intelligence and law enforcement failures that preceded the attacks, including the provocative, unheeded warnings given President Bush and his top advisors during the summer of 2001. Reading from Newsweek here. The report was completed last December. Bush administration has taken a hard line against public disclosure of this. In some cases, these sources say, the administration has even sought to reclassify some material that was already discussed in public testimony, a move one Senate staffer called ludicrous. Democratic Senator Bob Graham and Republican Representative Porter Goss, who oversaw the report, are now complaining to Vice President Dick Cheney that people should have the right to know what's in this. Jim in Santa Fe, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program.
Hi, Tom, and welcome to Santa Fe.
Well, thank you. I'm honored to be in Santa Fe, and glad to have you here on our radio home.
Yeah, you're our kind of guy. Regarding that list of questions you asked at the beginning, you know, that's obviously very important stuff, and I'm kind of putting together a few of the, bigger questions that are bugging me, a lot of which are things that you have focused on, to send to some people I'm in correspondence with at NPR and so on, trying to get some coverage on these things. Mm-hmm. And regarding that list of questions that you asked at the beginning, is there a source on that? Is that written down somewhere, someplace I can refer to or grab it somewhere?
Yes. Yeah, absolutely, Jim. And I should have referenced it when I said it. I'm coming back to it and would have, but nonetheless, when I use other people's material, just as an author, I should know this. You know, you cite your sources. I got these from unanswered questions.org on the web. unanswered questions.org, very easy to remember, and they have some another list of interesting, a little more detailed questions also on that website. This is also from unanswered questions.org. They say, for example, FBI agents Colleen Rowley of Minneapolis and Kenneth Williams in Phoenix and Robert Wright in Chicago, independently, three different offices, three different FBI agents, have courageously come forward with evidence that their superiors derailed promising investigations that might have stopped the 9/11 attacks. While on the trail of terrorists, why were capable field agents hot-blocked, thwarted, intimidated, and undermined by their superiors at FBI headquarters? Larry Klayman of Judicial Watch has even suggested possible treason. It's like, whoa, what's going on with this?
Well, again, back to that initial list of questions, all of which were pretty hard-hitting. Are they referenced within the website in a way that you, for instance, as a journalist, are satisfied that they come from somewhere and have some backup?
Yeah, these are all, and in fact, you'll find all kinds of links out to both traditional mainstream news sources that back up the assertions, you know, when these things were first reported, and government sources. I mean, it's very well documented. UnansweredQuestions.org has a lot of good stuff on this.
That sounds like just the website I'm looking for. Maybe I don't need to put together my own letter. Maybe all the unanswered questions are right there.
Yeah, or you can always, you know, paraphrase, or you might want to contact them and see if they've got some, you know, a short, punchy thing that you can pull together for this.
Mm-hmm. Good. So, well, thank you, and thanks for everything you do.
You're welcome. Thank you, Jim, for being on the show and joining us here in our radio home of democracy. I appreciate your call very much. House Intelligence Committee Chairman Goss, a staunch Republican and former CIA officer, who in the past has consistently defended the administration's handling of 9/11 issues and is considered close to Cheney, is very upset that his report is being suppressed by the Bush administration. Quote, "I find this process horrendously frustrating," he said in an interview. This is in Newsweek magazine. He was particularly piqued that the administration was refusing to declassify material that top intelligence officials had already testified about in public. He says, quote, "Senior intelligence officials said things in public hearings that the administration doesn't want us to put in the report. That's not something I can rationally accept without further public explanation," end quote. And he's talking about things like the now famous FBI Phoenix memo of July 2001, reporting that Middle Eastern nationals were enrolling in U.S. flight schools. The administration's tough stand, the Newsweek says, some sources say, doesn't augur well for the National Commission on Terrorist Attacks, which is conducting its own investigation into the events of 9/11. And when one of the commissioners, former Congressman Tim Romer, last week wanted to look at transcripts, he was denied access. And the president wants to invoke executive privilege to keep the material out of the panel's hands, according to Newsweek. "I think it's outrageous," says Romer, who plans to raise the matter at a commission hearing this week. You won't hear about it on the network news, though, I'll bet. Newsweek says, "The tensions over the release of 9/11-related material seem especially relevant, if not ironic, in light of recent reports that the president's political advisors have devised an unusual re-election strategy that essentially uses the story of September 11 as the liftoff for his campaign. The White House is delaying the Republican nominating convention scheduled for New York City until the last week in September 2004, the latest in the party's history. This would allow Bush's acceptance speech, now slated for September 2nd, to meld seamlessly into the 9/11 commemoration events due to take place in the city the next week. But they don't want people asking questions about 9/11. They very much don't want people asking questions. What might some of those questions be? Well, first of all, the big question, the one that I'm curious about, was this a crime or an act of war? Should we be dealing with it as a crime? Should we be involving police agencies all over the world to try and crack this crime of the century? I think we should. For example, according to published reports, this is from unanswered questions.org, according to published and confirmed mainstream reports, these are like New York Times quality reports, Mohammed Atta, the head hijacker, was wired $100,000 by the Pakistani intelligence agency, the ISI, just prior to the attacks. The man who approved this wire, General Mahmoud, was meeting with top officials of the U.S. government, including Intelligence Committee Chairman Representative Peter Goss of Florida and Senator Bob Graham, on the morning of the attacks. The FBI confirmed on ABC News that the payment had come from banks in Pakistan. What's this about? Well, the Bush administration doesn't want us to know. They're actively trying to suppress the investigation. Why? If this is a crime, shouldn't we find out what's going on? Jim from Philadelphia, you've got some thoughts on this. Welcome to our radio home. Welcome to the Tom Hartman program, Jim.
Hey, Tom, how's it going there?
Well, how are you? What's on your mind?
We need to go back to the 2000 campaign.
Okay.
If you remember the big discussion, one of the big discussions, there was very few of them really, was Bush's missile defense shield.
Right.
And the opponents were saying, hey, we don't need a missile defense shield. We're vulnerable to terrorist attacks. And that was the big argument, terror attacks versus missile defense shield.
That's naturally right.
Bush had to play down anything relating to potential terrorist attacks because it was going to take away from his argument that we need missile defense shield.
So he was arguing because the folks who sell the missile defense shields were making big bucks. In fact, that was Rumsfeld's job before he came into this administration. He was a lobbyist for the defense industry and promoting SDI.
Okay, so any information that the intelligence community dug up pertaining to potential terrorist attacks had to be suppressed.
Right. Good point,
and,
Jim.
And that's where it all started, and it just rolled downhill from there, and 9/11 resulted because we couldn't know about terrorist attacks because we got to reward our buddies with this missile defense shield, plain and simple.
We got to reward the buddies who are contributing the massive amounts of money to the political campaigns of the last election cycle. Remarkable. Jim, thanks. Thanks, Jim and Philly. Thank you very much for calling. I appreciate you being on the show. Dean in Santa Fe wants to talk about the FBI agents who were indicted. Dean, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much. First of all, I'm old enough to remember when JFK got killed and there was no internet, there was no dedicated group of researchers at the time. So unlike then, as soon as 9/11 happened, things just started flying onto the internet. Questions, and I've been kind of following this a lot. And one thing that's kind of obscure, but I remember about a year ago seeing a notice that two FBI agents in San Diego were indicted in conjunction with what sounded like a Middle Eastern named broker, who actually made some stock transition the day before 9/11, and said that the stock market was going to go down to 3,000 points or something.
Hmm.
These agents were indicted along with this broker in conjunction with 9/11. And yet I haven't heard anything about it since.
And all those puts that were out there that were widely publicized. A put is when you contact a broker and you essentially buy you contract to sell a stock at a particular, buy or sell a stock, I forget which, at a particular lower price, and if the stock falls, you make a big profit. And there were all these puts that were sold on United Airlines and American Airlines and a couple of others that crashed, and they were all puts for September 11. And I have not heard of anybody looking into who did that or why. Have you, Dean?
Done to the Deutsche Bank primarily, and it's curious because I believe it's the deputy CIA director, Buzzy Cronyard is his name. He served in the that bank until maybe the year 2000. And some researchers that have been following the money, like Tom Flacco, F-L-A-C-C-O, kind of lead things, you know, back to him. And why hasn't he been talked about or interviewed or to my knowledge, he hasn't been under any testimony. But since the majority of put options, if not all of them, were done to the Deutsche Bank and their subsidiaries, and the fact that there's a high-level CIA agent who came from that bank, there are questions surrounding that.
A whole bunch of them. Dean, thank you for bringing that up. Dean in Santa Fe, thanks for calling the show. I appreciate that. 682 hijackings have occurred worldwide since 1972. All were thoroughly investigated, all 682 of them. Nearly a year has passed, and the four hijackings of 9/11 have neither been investigated by the Federal Aviation Administration, nor have they been the subject of public hearings. After 682 hijackings, every single one investigated, except for the hijackings of 9/11. The precedent for convening an immediate investigative commissions on issues of national security has been clearly established, according to unanswered questions.org. In the case of Pearl Harbor and the JFK assassination, as Dean, or maybe it was Jim from Philly, I think it was Dean from Santa Fe, pointed out, why is it so vehemently being blocked and resisted by the administration and others? Why, according to Senator Daschle, did both the president and vice president lobby him for no investigation whatsoever? What's going on? We'll be back after this break on the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
Mom, Dad,
someone's going to try and get me to take drugs.
Want to do something about it?
You're going to have to make me tell you where I am and who I'm with every day. Don't like the sound of that?
Tom, you got to be the grown-up.
Kids with involved parents are less likely to try drugs. So ask them, who, what, where, when? Questions. They're the anti-drug.
Call 1-800-729-6686 for more information. Paid for by Office of National Drug Control Policy.
All right, folks, while we have a minute, let's go up to the chopper with Brad Paul, get a traffic update. Brad, what do you see up there?
Well, thanks a lot, Scott. Nothing you're going to want to hear about, unfortunately. You can expect major delays on the interstate. An overturned tractor trailer's got traffic backed up for about 25 miles. It's a real bad situation, Scott, but I do have good news.
What's that, Brad?
I just saved a load of money on car insurance by switching to GEICO.
See how much you could save. Visit GEICO.com. GEICO, 15 minutes online could save you 15% on car insurance.
There are over 70 million Americans who suffer from arthritis. But for arthritis pain relief, there's only one Aleve, the medicine more and more doctors are recommending for all-day relief of pain. Doctors know Aleve can stop tough pain all day with fewer pills and Tylenol. And Aleve works right at the site of arthritis to provide fast, effective relief. Get relief doctors recommend. Aleve, arthritis pain relief that's all day strong, all day long. Use as directed for minor arthritis pain. Comparisons based on minimum 24-hour label dosing.
Whether it's fair or not, people judge you by the words you use. In business and socially, your vocabulary and language skills tell everyone about your background, education, even your intelligence. That's why you need Verbal Advantage. While you listen, Verbal Advantage will give you the confidence that comes with a strong command of the English language. No more fumbling for the right word. No more embarrassment at how to express yourself. No more fear of using the wrong word. And it's so easy. To learn, you simply listen. When you want. Where you want. See why over 100,000 people have already gotten the verbal advantage they need for success.
To learn more about verbal advantage, call now. 1-800-444-1984. That's 444-1984. 1-800-444-1984.
Brendan was spending the afternoon helping me pick out furniture for the new place.
The ladies are doing a little furniture shopping, are they?
That's scary. I hope you didn't make any choices without a professional.
Beanbag chairs for everybody.
God help us. Bearskin rug.
I put the car in swinger, baby.
On the IE America Radio Network.
You know, Jamie, if people don't listen to Animal Talk, things with their animals won't go well.
Oh, they won't.
No, absolutely not. You see, because a dog will poop in the corner, and then a cat will end up peeing on a pillow. Then you'll have somebody who has an iguana that turns a little red. We don't want red iguanas. We don't want poopy in the corner. We don't want cat pee. If you don't listen to Animal Talk, you'll have crap everywhere.
Animal Talk, Sunday nights on the IE America Radio Network.
Peter Werby Show is now airing at a new time. Hi, it's Julene Jordan. The IE America Radio Network has added many exciting new shows to the lineup, and in doing so, the Peter Werby Show has a new time slot. It's weekdays, 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern. Join us as we share with you progressive views about peace and social justice that you won't find in the corporate and conservative media. Join us 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern on the IE America Radio Network. For more information, go to www.ieamericaradio.com. From the network that brings you different points of view from the likes of Peter Werby and Mike Malloy, now a different point of view on the news. IE America is proud to present WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. WINS is a unique news service that focuses on issues that affect our daily lives. WINS is not about what big business wants you to hear. WINS is about us. To hear WINS, go to IEAmericaRadio.com and click on WINS. If you like what you hear, call your local radio station and say you want WINS. It's something different. It's from IE America and WINS.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
If it was a crime, if it was an act of war, who was the country behind it? Well, it turns out that, well, maybe there's some link to Iraq in that the New Yorker had an interesting article last week connecting Iraq to Osama bin Laden through the Bechtel Corporation. Bin Laden's father was investing in, had a $10 million ownership in the Fremont Corporation. But it wasn't a nation that attacked us. It was a mafia. This is a crime. This is a bunch of criminals. They need to be tracked down. And so the questions, why, for example, why are Bush administration lawyers aggressively seeking to limit the victims' families' access to evidence in their suits against the airlines? And why have they sought tort reform to limit damages? It's now, and another question, it's now an established fact that all the anthrax, remember the anthrax letters that came? They hit Senator Pat Leahy and Tom Daschle. Leahy was the head of the Judiciary Committee as they were considering the Patriot Act. This was what Leahy had to let out of committee. They hit their offices, somehow just it kind of hit the Democrats. It's now an established fact that all that anthrax came from the U.S. Army facility at Fort Detrick, Maryland. Recently, it surfaced that the White House was put on CPRO the very morning of September 11, more than a month before the anthrax attacks. What's going on? Two-star General Donald Kerik comments that Clinton advisors met weekly to stop bin Laden, but he didn't detect that kind of focus from the Bush administration. How does this reconcile with Ashcroft's personal decision to heed an FBI threat assessment and not fly commercially in the weeks leading up to the attack? What do these folks know that they're trying to keep from us, that they're so aggressively trying to suppress the results of the small investigation that has been done and prevent any other investigations into what happened in 9/11. This is a crime. It needs to be dealt with as a crime. We need to go after these criminals. I'll see you tomorrow on the Tom Hartman Show. Peter Werby is up next with Julene Jordan. A wonderful program. You're going to enjoy it. And we'll talk to you tomorrow. Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network.
It's coming. Through a hole in the air from those gnats in Tiananmen Square. It's coming from a field that this ain't exactly real, or it's real but it ain't exactly there. From the war against disorder, from the side.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Copyright 2003.